Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we'll share the outcome of a county planning meeting on the controversial Cottonwood sand mine. We'll also have a report on the steel fire, which forced evacuation of thousands in the Rancho San Diego and Jamul areas. Then we'll share details on the life and legacy of Lemon Grove Councilman Steve Fayi, who died tragically of heart failure this week. Gloria Chadwick, a registered nurse on the Grossmont Healthcare Board, has resigned. The county's spraying for mosquitoes has been extended to La Mesa after more mosquitoes were tested positive for West Nile virus. El Cajon police announced the arrest of two men for the vicious murder in a robbery gone wrong in Wells Park. A suspect has been arrested in the horrific death of a dog dragged behind a vehicle in Spring Valley. On People Power, we'll have an inspiring story about the owners of Pizzabilities, a new Alpine restaurant that hires special needs workers. On Capitol Report, hear about the new budget signed into law by President Donald Trump and what supporters and critics have to say about it. Find out how your local legislators voted and what the impacts could mean for you. From California News Service, we'll have a report on how the budget cuts are hitting rural areas hard. Then on 2025 Talks, hear about the nominee to head up NOAA, the National Weather Agency, who wants to see cuts in the agency that could impact weather forecasting. Also hear how the budget could affect farmers. In La Mesa, a toddler suffered a tragic death after falling out a window. From California News Service, hear about teen artists who are advocating for more arts funding for public schools. Plus, we'll have details on a fatality crash in Ramona. We'll also have a report on an Ice Out of El Cajon rally held there, and we'll share some hot weather tips for hikers as the weather heats up out here in East County. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Cottonwood sand mine is a wash, at least for now. After nearly 6 hours of testimony, presentations, and discussion, the San Diego County Planning Commission on July 8th deadlocked. The tie vote constituted a no-go for mining on about 215 acres of the 280-acre former Cottonwood golf course site. Barry Jantz with the Stop Cottonwood Sand Mine Group called it a big win, adding, "It was a little too close for comfort, but 3-3 is a denial." The applicant's attorney, Jennifer Lynch, gave an animated presentation that showed how the mining operation would be conducted and the land reclamation to follow. A large contingent of local contractors, builders, and members of the local Carpenters Union also spoke in favor of the project. Lynch focused on the need for a reliable local source of high-quality aggregate sand instead of relying on imported sand and potential supply chain disruptions. Sand is needed for the construction and manufacturing industries and is most commonly used in cement. It's also used in asphalt for roadways. Lynch noted that after the mining project would end, the developer would gift the county nearly 150 acres of open space. Lynch claimed in the end, the project would improve the site's ecology, creating trails and linkages for wildlife species. In plans for nearly a decade, the Cottonwood sand mining project has been proposed as a 10-year endeavor, with an extended 2 years of reclamation after, seeking to extract 4.3 million cubic yards of sand from more than 200 acres. Operations would run from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Trucks would be on the move from 9 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. Jantz from the Stop Cottonwood Group shared a video presentation showing numerous reasons for the commissioners to deny the project, including impacts such as noise, pollution, increased traffic, and fire hazards. Also part of the group presentation were Rancho San Diego resident Brian Lorenz and former county supervisor Diane Jacob, also a former planning commissioner who has a home in the area. Jacob said, "I've been a part of many land use hearings, and in my decades of experience, I have never seen such a destructive project with such negative impacts on the people who live in the community." She disagreed with the proponent's claim regarding the need for a local source of sand and noted that there could be no guarantee that the sand would stay local. The former supervisor added that 150 acres of open space being offered by the applicant is already guaranteed in the county's general plan. Jacob said that before any use permit may be granted, it must be found compatible with adjacent land uses, homes, and other structures. She stated, "A sand mine is not compatible in any way with adjacent uses." In a strange coincidence, a fire broke out in the Rancho San Diego area just after 2 p.m., when the Planning Commission conversation about the project was in its last hour at the county's operations center in San Diego. Many of the 100-plus member audience left after getting fire alerts on their phones. The steel fire came within 50 feet of Lorenz's home before firefighters were able to contain it. Jantz said that he expects the developer to appeal the Planning Commission's vote to the Board of Supervisors, but he said opponents of the sand mine, quote, like our prospects with the Board of Supervisors because the voters are talking directly to the people they vote for. Jantz noted that two supervisors represent areas adjacent to the site, Joel Anderson and Monica Montgomery Stepp, so opponents will be reaching out to their representatives. The Cottonwood project has been opposed by residents since it was first proposed in 2018. The major use permit for sand mining at the former Cottonwood Golf Club was requested by Cottonwood Cajon ES LLC, spearheaded by developer Michael Schlesinger. Schlesinger bought the former golf course in 2015. He also previously developed the Escondido Country Club, shutting down the golf course to build homes. The Cottonwood Golf Course site is along the Sweetwater River and is adjacent to homes, schools, and businesses in Rancho San Diego, near Jamul. It is also adjacent and directly upstream from a federal wildlife preserve. Thousands of residents signed petitions and voiced opposition to the project, voicing concerns over water and air pollution, noise, traffic impacts on local wildlife, potential property value declines, and more. The Valle de Oro Community Planning Group, earlier this year, voted 11-0 to recommend denial of the project. At a Valle de Oro community meeting in March, residents, business owners, and San Miguel Consolidated Fire Protection District leadership expressed concerns about potential adverse health effects, environmental impacts, and increased traffic along important community thoroughfares, which are also critical evacuation routes when a wildfire occurs, such as the steel fire that threatens homes and forced roadway shutdowns near the proposed sand mining site while the hearing was going on. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
After more than 30 years of service, Grossmont Healthcare District Board Member Gloria Chadwick has resigned from the Board of Directors. A registered nurse and Democrat, Director Chadwick has been a strong advocate for healthcare access, mental health, and the advancement of nursing and community wellness throughout East San Diego County. Aaron Bizak, Interim CEO of the Grossmont Healthcare District, issued a statement thanking Chadwick for her long-standing commitment and her tireless effort to serve the people of East San Diego County, adding, "Her leadership and voice will be missed." Chadwick told East County Magazine that she is stepping down due to health issues. Chadwick also voiced concerns over impacts on local healthcare from the federal budget approved by Congress. She said budget cuts will challenge our local hospitals, clinics, and nonprofits, adding, "I hope our Grossmont Hospital can weather the impact. It has been my greatest honor to represent our East County community." Chadwick has not left community service completely, as she still serves on the Sequon Oversight Committee for the tribe's new medical, dental, behavioral health, and pharmacy clinics slated to open soon. The Grossmont Healthcare District Board of Directors will have 60 days from the effective date of resignation, June 30th, to either call for a special election or appoint a qualified individual from Zone 4 to serve the remainder of Director Chadwick's current term, which ends in December 2026. The process for filling the vacancy will be discussed publicly during the next regularly scheduled meeting of the board on Wednesday, July 17th at 9 a.m. at the Grossmont Healthcare District Conference Center. In an era when key healthcare issues have been politicized, Chadwick's resignation leaves the board with three Republicans and one Democrat, though the board is ostensibly nonpartisan. Grossmont Healthcare District Zone 4 includes all or portions of the communities of Alpine, El Cajon Unincorporated, Harbinson Crest, Lakeside, Pine Valley, and tribal communities including the Barona, Sequon, and Viejas reservations. The Grossmont Healthcare District is a public agency created in 1952 that supports the health and wellness of East County through oversight of Sharp Grossmont Hospital. Operation of a public health and wellness library, healthcare career scholarships for local students, and community grants and sponsorship programs. The district's elected board of directors represents approximately 520,000 people residing over 750 square miles. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
Community members are grieving the loss of Sativi Fayai, known as Steve. The Lemon Grove City Council member and Helix High football coach died Tuesday morning of a sudden heart attack. Fayai, who was elected to the City Council in November, also worked at Sprouts Grocery Store and was an active member of Journey Church. A statement released by the city praised Fayai for bringing a spirit of compassion and integrity to the City Council. Always putting our community first, from advocating for youth programs and public safety to championing solutions to homelessness, Steve truly led from the heart, according to the city's statement. Lemon Grove Mayor Allison Snow posted on Facebook, "I am still in shock. My heart grieves with Lauren, his wife, and their boys." She added, "He was an incredible dad, coach, and friend. The world is at a loss without him, his smile, and his warmth. Hold your loved ones a little tighter and cherish them a little harder," said the mayor. Lemon Grove City Council member Jessica Heredia remembers Fayai as a devoted father, husband, and friend who will be truly missed by everyone who knew him. "He was a breath of fresh air for the Lemon Grove community," she told East County Magazine, adding, "My deepest condolences and prayers go out to his wonderful wife, Lauren, and sons, Cameron and Riley." La Mesa City Council member Genevieve Suzuki says, "Steve made me feel like I had a friend from my home state of Hawaii when we first met. We discussed Samoan and Hawaiian cultures and look forward to getting our ohana together. Mahalo for blessing us with your friendship." State Senator Akila Weber offers prayers for Fayai's family, friends, and students. "His presence, leadership, and care for others made a real difference in the lives of many," the senator posted on social media. A GoFundMe account titled "Support for the Fayai Family" has been set up by his sister-in-law, Lindsay Holmes, to help Councilman Fayai's wife and their two young children with the financial challenges they now face after his sudden death. As for his legacy, Holmes quotes Fayai's own words. "One day when Jesus calls me to glory," he said, "there are only two things that I'll ever want to be remembered for: being a great husband to my queen and a great dad to my two amazing sons." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. The County of San Diego is expanding the area that it's spraying for mosquitoes. After spraying pesticides in the Rolando area and finding more mosquitoes that tested positive for West Nile virus, the county will spray portions of La Mesa on Monday and Tuesday, July 14th and 15th, between 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. A map of areas to be sprayed is available at Vector Control's Adult Mosquito Control Information webpage, which also has details and contact info. The new spraying area includes the East Ridge neighborhood, areas along El Cajon Boulevard, portions of Rolando, and communities north to Parkway Drive. The spray is an ultra-low-volume, truck-mounted pesticide mist called Aqua Duet, approved by the Environmental Protection Agency. While the treatments pose a low risk to people and pets, according to the county, and the pesticide dissipates in about 20 to 30 minutes, residents may wish as a precaution to stay inside, keep pets and pet bowls inside, and close windows during treatment. Normal activities can be resumed about 30 minutes afterwards. Also, beekeepers and those with insects kept outdoors are encouraged to shelter hives and habitats during treatments. Beekeepers registered with the county's Department of Agriculture Weights and Measures can request to receive advance notice when pesticide spraying that may affect bees is applied to blossoming plants in their area. Now, there have been no reported human cases of West Nile virus in San Diego County this year. In 2024, the county reported two cases. However, West Nile virus remains a potential deadly threat. Some people who become infected can suffer fever, headaches, body aches, joint pain, vomiting, diarrhea, or rash, and in rare cases, they can become extremely ill and even die. So if you have symptoms, it's important to seek medical care. County officials say people should continue to follow the county's Prevent, Protect, Report guidelines to protect themselves from mosquitoes. Those include finding and dumping out standing water around homes to keep mosquitoes from breeding. Dump out or remove any item inside or outside of homes that can hold water, whether it's from rain or landscape irrigation. These things can include plant saucers, rain barrels, buckets, garbage cans, toys, old tires, and wheelbarrows. Mosquito fish, available for free by contacting the Vector Control Program, can be used to control mosquito breeding in backyard water sources such as stagnant swimming pools, ponds, fountains, and horse troughs. Protect yourself from mosquito-borne illnesses by wearing long sleeves and pants, or use insect repellent when outdoors. Be sure to use insect repellent that contains DEET, picaridin, oil of lemon eucalyptus, paramethane diol, or IR3535. Make sure screens on windows and doors are in good condition and secured to keep insects out. The Aedes aegypti mosquito that carries West Nile virus bites during the daytime and can reproduce in as little as a half inch of water, even indoors. Report increased mosquito activity, unmaintained green swimming pools, and other mosquito breeding sources, as well as dead birds, crows, ravens, jays, hawks, and owls, which can carry West Nile virus, to the County Vector Control Program by calling 858-694-2888 or email vector@sdcounty.ca.gov.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. The County of San Diego is expanding the area that it's spraying for mosquitoes. After spraying pesticides in the Rolando area and finding more mosquitoes that tested positive for West Nile virus, the county will spray portions of La Mesa on Monday and Tuesday, July 14th and 15th, between 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. A map of areas to be sprayed is available at Vector Control's Adult Mosquito Control Information webpage, which also has details and contact info. The new spraying area includes the East Ridge neighborhood, areas along El Cajon Boulevard, portions of Rolando, and communities north to Parkway Drive. The spray is an ultra-low-volume, truck-mounted pesticide mist called Aqua Duet, approved by the Environmental Protection Agency. While the treatments pose a low risk to people and pets, according to the county, and the pesticide dissipates in about 20 to 30 minutes, residents may wish as a precaution to stay inside, keep pets and pet bowls inside, and close windows during treatment. Normal activities can be resumed about 30 minutes afterwards. Also, beekeepers and those with insects kept outdoors are encouraged to shelter hives and habitats during treatments. Beekeepers registered with the county's Department of Agriculture Weights and Measures can request to receive advance notice when pesticide spraying that may affect bees is applied to blossoming plants in their area. Now, there have been no reported human cases of West Nile virus in San Diego County this year. In 2024, the county reported 2 cases. However, West Nile virus remains a potential deadly threat. Some people who become infected can suffer fever, headaches, body aches, joint pain, vomiting, diarrhea, or rash, and in rare cases, they can become extremely ill and even die. So if you have symptoms, it's important to seek medical care. County officials say people should continue to follow the county's Prevent, Protect, Report guidelines to protect themselves from mosquitoes. Those include finding and dumping out standing water around homes to keep mosquitoes from breeding. Dump out or remove any item inside or outside of homes that can hold water, whether it's from rain or landscape irrigation. These things can include plant saucers, rain barrels, buckets, garbage cans, toys, old tires, and wheelbarrows. Mosquito fish, available for free by contacting the Vector Control Program, can be used to control mosquito breeding in backyard water sources such as stagnant swimming pools, ponds, fountains, and horse troughs. Protect yourself from mosquito-borne illnesses by wearing long sleeves and pants, or use insect repellent when outdoors. Be sure to use insect repellent that contains DEET, picaridin, oil of lemon eucalyptus, paramethane diol, or IR3535. Make sure screens on windows and doors are in good condition and secured to keep insects out. The Aedes aegypti mosquito that carries West Nile virus bites during the daytime and can reproduce in as little as a half inch of water, even indoors. Report increased mosquito activity, unmaintained green swimming pools, and other mosquito breeding sources, as well as dead birds, crows, ravens, jays, hawks, and owls, which can carry West Nile virus, to the County Vector Control Program by calling 858-694-2888 or email vector@sdcounty.ca.gov.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. El Cajon police announced the arrest of two men on suspicion of murdering DeAndre Bryant at Wells Park in El Cajon. 22-year-old Frankie England and 35-year-old Dontell Wallace, the suspects, have pleaded not guilty of killing Bryant, who was 46 years old. Bryant was in the parking lot listening to music around 9:45 on April 13th when two men tried to rob him of gold chains. The would-be thieves chased Bryant, striking him in the head and again in the chest. Surveillance video showed the suspects fleeing and getting into a vehicle, leaving Bryant to die at the scene. His sister Regina told ABC 10 News that she's filled with joy and relief that her brother's murder won't go unsolved, but voiced surprise that one of the suspects was an acquaintance of the family. At a press conference a week after Bryant was killed, his family, wearing T-shirts with Bryant's photo, asked for help from the public to identify the killers. His mother voiced anger and grief, stating tearfully, "How does a mother get over this? The son getting killed for no reason."
This is Juliet Sanders. San Diego County Animal Services has identified the person responsible for the horrific July 2nd incident in Spring Valley, in which a dog was dragged behind a pickup truck. After seeing video coverage of the incident on television, the dog's owner contacted County Animal Services and admitted that it was his truck and his dog involved. Animal control officers confirmed that he was the driver shown on video. Tragically, due to the extent of the dog's injuries, the animal had already been euthanized by a veterinary clinic before officers arrived. Animal Services intercepted the dog's remains before cremation to preserve evidence for the investigation. San Diego County Animal Services identified the man as 58-year-old Joseph Holland, a person who is experiencing homelessness, according to spokesman Chuck Westerhide. Vaughn Maurice, director of County Animal Services, says, "This is an incredibly sad and disturbing case. While we are all grateful to have identified the person responsible, our hearts break for this dog and what it endured." He thanked the public for providing information to help identify Holland and bring justice for the animal, which suffered fatal injuries. Holland reportedly told animal control officers that he forgot he had tied the dog to the vehicle after making a brief stop at a restroom and claimed he was heartbroken, Times of San Diego reports. Witnesses to the incident, however, said Holland laughed when he tried to intervene to save the dog. Videos showed the Doberman flipped over while being dragged at 30 to 40 miles per hour. The video taken by a witness showed the license plate of the black Cherokee SUV. Animal Services is filing animal cruelty charges against Holland with the San Diego County District Attorney's Office. Anyone with additional information related to the case is encouraged to contact San Diego County Animal Services at 619-236-2341.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. President Donald Trump on July 4th signed the highly contentious budget measure into law. It passed the Senate by a one-vote margin, and on July 3rd, the House of Representatives approved the measure. All of San Diego's Democratic representatives voted no, while Republican Daryl Issa voted in favor. Trump called the measure one big beautiful bill, but critics charge it will harm vulnerable Americans and dramatically increase the federal deficit while dramatically increasing funds for immigration enforcement and making permanent tax breaks for wealthy Americans passed during the first Trump administration. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, in a marathon floor speech, calls the bill a disgusting abomination. He adds, the GOP tax scam guts Medicaid, rips food from the mouths of children, seniors, and veterans, and rewards billionaires with massive tax breaks. Every single Democrat stands in strong opposition to this bill because we're standing up for the American people, he said. The Congressional Budget Office estimates the bill will increase federal deficits over the next years by nearly $3.3 trillion from now through 2034. The bill introduces new Medicaid work requirements, set to take effect on December 31, 2026, right after the midterm elections. States would be required to verify that able-bodied adults are working a minimum of 80 hours per month to remain eligible, ABC 10 News reports. This change was initially a work requirement for childless adults without disabilities, but the Senate expanded it to include able-bodied adults with children aged 15 and up. Other changes include requiring Medicaid re-enrollment to shift from once a year to 6 months and lowering provider taxes that states use to fund their share of Medicaid costs. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that these changes could result in 12 million Americans losing their health coverage by the end of the next decade. It could also cause hospitals in rural areas to close. The bill also includes a whopping $4.5 trillion extension of tax cuts first implemented during Trump's previous term, as well as about $350 billion that would go toward national security efforts, including funding Trump's deportation agenda. The bill also increases standard deductions by $1,000 for individuals and $2,000 for married couples, but only until 2028, just after the next presidential election. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that 3 million Americans will no longer qualify for SNAP benefits. That's Supplemental Nutrition Education Program, which was formerly known as food stamps. Republicans are looking to have states pick up some of the costs for SNAP benefits, but the federal government currently funds all benefit costs, and it's not clear whether states can afford to do so. The bill said that beginning in 2028, states will have to contribute a set percentage of those costs if their payment error rate exceeds 6%, PBS reports. The bill will also temporarily increase the standard deduction up to $4,000 for people age 65 and over, but only until 2028, expiring right after that presidential election takes place. Senate Republicans also approved an extension of Social Security tax breaks and an increase that would grant a $6,000 tax deduction for older Americans who earn less than $75,000 a year. The budget also allows individuals to deduct a certain amount of tip wages and overtime from their taxes, but we'll be phasing those benefits out based on annual income, expiring in 2028, you guessed it. The bill also increases the child tax credit to $2,200. It allows the debt ceiling to be raised by $5 trillion, even more than the $4 trillion the House approved last month. Lifting that debt limit also allows the government to pay for programs already approved by Congress while hugely inflating the deficit. Republicans also proposed to roll back The budget also rolls back tax breaks to boost clean energy projects fueled by renewable resources such as solar and wind. A tax break for people who buy newer used electric vehicles expires on September 30th of this year instead of 2032 under the original law. The final version of the bill was passed in the House by just a 4-vote margin, with all 212 Democrats voting in unison against the bill, along with two Republicans, Thomas Massie of Kentucky and Brian Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania. House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Republican, says in his speech on the House floor that the bill would make the U.S. stronger, safer, and more prosperous than ever. "Today we are laying a key cornerstone of America's new golden age," he proclaimed. Before the bill passed, Trump badgered lawmakers to pass the budget bill, which he claimed would provide the largest tax cuts in history and a booming economy. "What are the Republicans waiting for?" he wrote. "MAGA is not happy and it's costing you votes." California Senators Alex Padilla and Adam Schiff, both Democrats, voted against the bill, and U.S. Representatives Sarah Jacobs, Mike Levine, Scott Peters, and Juan Vargas also voted against it, all Democrats, while U.S. Representative Daryl Issa voted in favor of the bill, the only Republican in San Diego's delegation. Before the bill was passed, Issa said on X, "Every Democrat in Congress is about to vote against tax cuts on tips, overtime, Social Security, car loans, families with kids, and small businesses while promising billions in benefits for illegals. No wonder they're filibustering." North County Invisible, which has been holding protests at ISA's office and organized phone and email campaigns to ask ISA to oppose the measure, posted a meme on social media after the vote slamming ISA for voting to strip 12 million Americans of their health care, take food off the tables for 11 million people, as well as give billionaires huge tax breaks, shut down over 200 Planned Parenthood health centers, and supercharge ICE, giving them $5 billion. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez talked about what the bill will do to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. "This is not a simple budget increase. It is an explosion, making ICE bigger than the FBI, U.S. Bureau of Prisons, DEA, and others combined," she wrote on Blue Sky. California Senator Adam Schiff, in a press release, criticized Senate Republicans for voting to kick millions off of their health care plans, cut funding for food benefits, take away funding for rural hospitals, and more. He calls the measure a disaster for millions of Americans. Steve Ellis, president of Taxpayers for Common Sense, says in an email, "The Senate wants to lock in nearly $4.5 trillion in tax cuts while reducing net spending by less than $1.3 trillion, adding $3.24 trillion to our nation's already unsustainable debt." Ellis explains that when Congress doesn't pay for tax cuts today, those costs don't disappear because they compound with interest and land squarely on the backs of taxpayers tomorrow. This reconciliation bill represents the worst kind of fiscal malpractice, borrowing trillions to pay for massive tax cuts and pretending The bill will never come due, Ellis adds. In 2000, the national debt was under $6 trillion. Today, it's over $36 trillion. Brad Angerman of the Communications Network says a controversial proposal to sell off millions of acres of public lands was removed from the GOP mega bill in the Senate. The provision was cut following significant public backlash and concerns raised by congressional leaders from both parties, he says. Judith LeBanc, executive director of Native Organizers Alliance Action Fund, says organizing and mobilizing efforts were key to stopping the sale of our public lands. As promised during the campaign, the GOP tried to sell off our public lands without any public process to help pay for tax cuts for billionaires and major corporations. But Indian Country and our allies were paying attention, and we came together to shut it down. According to Common Cause, the bill hands out massive tax breaks to billionaire donors, hurts programs like Medicaid and SNAP that support communities, and pours billions of dollars into Trump's cruel anti-immigrant agenda. This isn't just bad policy, Common Cause states in a press release. It's the product of a corrupt system rigged to serve billionaires over the rest of us. It's a glaring example of how big money distorts our democracy and enables a billionaire's budget to steamroll through Congress. Common Cause emphasizes the need to continue the fight against the corrosive influence of money in politics and corruption.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. Any way you slice it, Pizzabilities, Alpine's newest addition to the culinary scene, is serving community in some unexpected ways. While Pizzabilities serves delicious pizza pies, it is not your typical pizza joint. About half of its staff are people with special needs who have intellectual, physical, or other challenges. The fast casual restaurant employs about 24 employees. All workers wear bright orange t-shirts with Pizzabilities Pizza with Purpose on the front and Where Pizza and Abilities Rise Together on the back, and they also wear brighter smiles. Pizzas are handmade and personalized by employees at a counter with several different crusts, including cauliflower sauces, pesto and cheeses, including a vegan cheese option, with many toppings for diners. Each pizza is custom-built to the customer's likings in a build-it-yourself style, a la Subway or Chipotle. The restaurant also serves salads and desserts, plus wine and beer on tap. A combined undertaking between accomplished business owner Josh Baker and Italian restaurant veteran Ron Berner, Pizzabilities is open 7 days a week. Long before its official opening July 12th, the community has been backing the new restaurant with some offers to donate equipment and others wanting to get involved, including people from his church, says Baker. Baker adds that everybody he's spoken with loves the concept. He says, "We attracted attention from many news outlets and even a reality show TV producer. We have been inundated with support from everyone, including vendors who are donating services and supplies." Baker sees Pizzabilities broadening conversation around inclusive employment. Pizzabilities' website notes that the restaurant is where purpose meets passion, where inclusion is baked into every slice, and where people of all abilities are given the chance to shine. All employees are being cross-trained from making pizzas to greeting bussing tables, running food to customers at their tables, restocking supplies, folding pizza boxes, cleaning, and more. Baker says there's a role for people of all abilities. Pizzabilities was inspired by Grace, the daughter of Josh and his wife, Amy Baker. Born with Down syndrome, Grace Baker has spent her life exceeding expectations and pushing for growth, independence, and equality, says her dad. After recently graduating high school, Grace was looking to land a job, but meaningful employment opportunities proved few and far between for the teenager. Seeking to help their daughter, Josh and Amy Baker didn't wait for someone to open the workforce doors. They decided to open one for her. Baker found the perfect partner in Ron Berner, a football coach at El Capitan High School, who was also Baker's baseball coach when he attended West Hills High in the late 90s. Berner says when Josh Baker approached him, the decision to help was a no-brainer. His passion to help not only Grace, but all families with children that have disabilities just totally inspired me, says Berner. This is something we envision can help a lot of families with similar situations throughout the country. Berner knows a little something about the restaurant business and pizza. After all, his grandfather started Nicolosi's Italian restaurant nearly 75 years ago. Berner has been running the Nicolosi's restaurants in San Diego and Santee since 2009. He says, we are combining a mixture of great New York-style pizza and fast casual dining with takeout and delivery. Nicolosi's has always been a family-owned company that plays a huge part in every community we serve, from youth sports to community events and just about everything in between, he says, adding, we bring over 70 years of pizza-making experience to this awesome concept. Baker, who owns an escrow company and runs other real estate ventures, says his success in other businesses means the restaurant wasn't opened as a way to become wealthy. It was for Grace and others like her to have gainful employment. Baker sees this as a model that he plans to franchise throughout San Diego County and across the U.S. He hopes that Pizza Abilities might also inspire other businesses to support inclusion of the special needs community. He explains, our ideal franchisee is a family like mine, with a member with special needs that wants to have a place to call their own and create jobs for their local disabled community. Other businesses like Pizza Abilities have found success, including Michael's Cafe and Bakery in Redondo Beach, Howdy Homemade in Dallas, and Bakeability in Holocong, Pennsylvania. Bakeability owner Paula DeFabio Fasciano, who has two special needs children, started her business because she said she knew the unemployment within the intellectual disabilities community is significantly higher than the national average. 18-year-old Taylan Brown is a part-time Pizza Abilities employee who has been mentoring her cousin Grace Baker on the ins and outs of pizza making. Brown says she has a lifetime of experience teaching Grace various things through the years and has learned the need to have patience in working with special needs colleagues. She says it's been really cool to see Grace transfer out of high school not knowing what to do, and now there's this whole new idea for her, and this is showing that people with special needs can have purpose. Brown says for Grace, working at Pizza Abilities is the best thing ever, adding, she is so happy. While having children with special needs can be challenging, Josh Baker says, Grace's life has changed my life for the better. She is a joy in everyone's life that she's around, and it just made me think, what are some ways I can get her interacting with more people and touching more lives? What is something she can get passionate about? Since Grace loves both people and pizza, she's definitely passionate about working at Pizza Abilities. Baker hopes Pizza Abilities will continue to provide a place where people look forward to coming to work, feel included, and enjoy the benefits of being a productive citizen just like everyone else. For many of Pizza Abilities employees, this has been their first job after unsuccessful efforts to find work, and they've expressed excitement as they start their training. Josh Baker concludes, it's an amazing feeling to be able to provide this for the special needs community.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Federal funding cuts planned for mental health and substance use programs will hit rural America especially hard. Anya Sapien explains.
President Donald Trump vowed to fix U.S. mental health, but his budget for health and human services cuts $1 billion from behavioral health and addiction grants. Don Hannaford with Rural Mind says that's vitally important in small communities, where the rate of suicide and opioid overdose is much higher than urban communities.
We're not being extremists when we say that there is a mental health crisis in rural America.
Only 14% of behavioral health clinics are rural, and about half treat substance abuse. At Idaho's Simply Hope Family Outreach, Nancy Windmill relies on the grants to treat teens and adults.
Why are they cutting it now? I mean, it's not over. We still have a drug problem. We still have opioids and fentanyl use that is out there that people are dying from hourly. Everybody's kind of wondering why this pocket of funding.
I'm Anya Slapian.
Some Ohio farmers say the federal government should do more to help them grow healthier foods. Many want to. And Joe Maxwell with the Farm Action Fund has ideas about making it happen.
They could shift government food procurement towards healthier foods, using government dollars and purchasing power to shift the agriculture and food system.
Food and agriculture add more than $100 billion to Ohio's economy every year. But the National Make America Healthy Again Commission calls poor diet a leading cause of chronic disease among kids. Farm Action wants the Trump administration to confront the current system, which it says routinely prioritizes profits of foreign-owned conglomerates over American farmers and families. The Ohio Department of Agriculture reports there are more than 76,000 farms in the state, and around 90% of them are family-owned. A Minnesota farm group is so alarmed by the clawback of USDA funding, it's joined a lawsuit against the federal government. The canceled grants for the Institute of Agriculture and Trade Policy aim to create fair and sustainable food production programs. The USDA said the grants were canceled for promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. The Institute's Aaron McKee points out funding was terminated just short of the finish line.
We feel like this is rolling back a lot of progress towards a fairer food system.
McKee was surprised by the grant termination. She says their work isn't really about DEI as much as it's about things that directly align with administration priorities.
Maximizing and promoting American agriculture, ensuring a safe, nutritious, and secure food supply, and enhancing rural prosperity.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
Welcome to 2025 Talks. We're following our democracy in historic times.
If confirmed, I will ensure staffing the Weather Service offices is its top priority. It's really important for the people to be there because they have relationships with the people in the local community. They're a trusted source.
Neil Jacobs, the nominee to lead the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is pledging to add staff to the National Weather Service, but he's also telling senators he favors cutting jobs at other parts of NOAA. The administration plans to slash $2 billion from the agency and wants to stop its work related to climate change. The Weather Service office in New Braunfels, Texas, had an emergency surge in staffing before catastrophic flooding there, but the funding reduction is likely to end research in multiple areas, including better predicting flash floods and understanding the worsening hurricanes. A federal judge is blocking President Donald Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship. The Supreme Court has dramatically limited court's ability to stop presidential orders, but the New Hampshire judge is responding to a class action lawsuit, which still allows for a nationwide injunction. That suit aligns with what has been the common view for a century, that the 14th Amendment means nearly every child born in the country automatically gets citizenship. The White House says new peace talks between Russia and Ukraine are coming, although the Kremlin continues to order its heaviest bombardments of the war. Trump has expressed frustration with Moscow and has restarted paused arms shipments to Kyiv. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is defending the shifting policy as driven by the needs of U.S. forces.
That, frankly, is something that is logical that you would do, especially after an extended engagement that we saw both in defense of Israel and in defense of our own bases. And so it was a very limited review of certain types of munitions to ensure that we had sufficient stockpiles.
According to an analysis done for the Joint Chiefs, the munitions sent to Ukraine did not threaten readiness. The administration says Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth alone was responsible for stopping the aid and did so without notifying the envoy to Kyiv, the State Department, or the president. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says the incident proves being the host of a talk radio show doesn't qualify a person to be Secretary of Defense.
Pause of weapons to Ukraine is at best a dangerous breakdown in communications, and at worst a sign that Secretary Hegseth is more interested in helping Putin than helping Ukraine. And what are U.S. allies supposed to make of this weapons pause?
Farmers say fluctuating trade policies are making it harder for their businesses. New tariffs on Brazil, Japan, South Korea, and looming import taxes on nearly all other trading partners are likely to impact the prices of agricultural products, threatening a bright spot for American exports. And Walter Schweitzer with the Montana Farmers Union says the just-passed budget megabill casts a shadow on the long-overdue farm bill.
They put some pretty strict parameters around what can and can't be in the farm bill. And utilizing a reconciliation process to craft and pass a farm bill scares the bejesus out of me.
He notes the new budget bill wasn't all bad news for farmers. Schweitzer says it raises reference prices for crops, enabling a better safety net if prices fall below new thresholds. But he says it radically changed SNAP and nutrition supports normally included in the ag bill. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A 14-month-old baby boy has died after falling from the second-story window of his family's housing unit on Valley View Circle in La Mesa on July 5th. The medical examiner's office has identified the victim as Kent Adam LaFave. After a 911 call was made, La Mesa police and Heartland fire personnel were dispatched. Life-saving measures were provided during transport of the toddler to Rady Children's Hospital. He was admitted but later pronounced dead shortly after midnight. The cause of death is listed as an accident due to cranial cerebral head injuries. This is a good reminder that in this hot weather, when it's tempting to open those windows, please be sure to keep a close eye on young children. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
More than 400 teen artists are gathering this weekend in Southern California to learn more about equity in arts education. The third annual Arts Advocacy Day kicks off a four-week course at the California State Summer School for the Arts. Speakers and workshops will tackle issues like the troubled rollout of Proposition 28 monies, which were supposed to fund new arts classes but have been diverted by some school districts to cover existing programs. Caitlin Lanoff is with the nonprofit Create California, which sponsors the event.
We want to make sure that students leave knowing that they are guaranteed money for the arts and that they can connect with their administrators to see how that money is spent and that they can reach out to their legislators at any point.
The program takes place at the California Institute of the Arts in Santa Clarita. The goal is to inspire the state's next entrepreneurs, artists, and culture makers to fight for education funding during a particularly challenging time. The feds just froze almost $7 billion in education grants nationwide to see if they align with Trump administration priorities. The money was supposed to be distributed on July 1st, leaving districts scrambling. Lanoff says programs like theater, music, and fine art are often the first to go when budgets are tight.
The potential impact on arts programs is that, and so is Prop 28 going to additional arts classes, they will be plugged in to fill the gaps of previous arts classes or cut completely for other uses.
In May, the Trump administration proposed eliminating the National Endowment for the Arts and has already canceled grants to hundreds of arts organizations. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A 35-year-old Ramona man died at the scene of a two-vehicle crash on State Route 67 in Ramona on July 9th. The victim was driving a Lexus southbound on State Route 67 near Branter Lane when his vehicle crossed the center line for unknown reasons and crashed head-on into a Ford Excursion. The Lexus driver was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver of the Ford, a 65-year-old Ramona woman, was transported to Palomar Hospital with moderate injuries. Four passengers in the Ford were taken to Palomar Hospital and to Rady Children's Hospital with moderate and minor injuries. This is an ongoing investigation, and it's unknown at this time if drugs or alcohol were a factor in the crash, according to Officer Jasmine Lopez with the California Highway Patrol. The identification of the victim has not yet been released, pending notification of family. The CHP's Captain Montague Udo says maintaining your lane is not just about following the rules, it's about safe driving. Drifting, unsafe passing, or even momentary distractions can lead to devastating head-on crashes. Stay centered, stay alert, and stay focused. Let's all do our part in keeping our roads safe, he advises. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. Summer is a popular time to get out in nature and take in those beautiful views along trails in San Diego County, but hiking in extreme heat can be dangerous or even deadly. To protect hikers, the county closes parks in remote areas due to excessive heat, but heat can be an issue on any trail. Firefighters and sheriff's deputies are called to help rescue people who become ill, often due to the heat, or who get injured while on hikes. CAL FIRE and San Diego County Fire Captain Michael Cornett says people, especially less experienced hikers, can avoid becoming ill or injured just by avoiding hiking during the hottest parts of the day. Instead, try a shaded trail or a coastal trail. Head out early before it gets hot, or go later in the day when it's starting to cool off. Here are some more safety tips to prepare for hiking in warm weather. Choose hikes that are appropriate for your skills and physical condition. Go with the safest trail option if heat's an issue. Stay hydrated. Drink water before, during, and after hiking. Check weather forecasts and be familiar with the terrain. Let somebody know when you will be returning, and don't just rely on your cell phone because it can lose reception in a remote area. Hike with others and never alone. Bring a backpack with food and water, extra sunscreen to reapply, and a flashlight, first aid kit, multipurpose tool, or a knife and a whistle to signal for help if needed. Park rangers recommend carrying about a quarter of water for every 2 to 3 miles that you plan to hike. Bring more water than you think you'll need and extra water on strenuous or steep trails. Non-perishable items like dried fruit, energy bars, trail mix, peanut butter, canned tuna, whole grain crackers, and jerky are healthy snacks that provide fuel to boost your energy levels. Be sure to bring a hat, sunglasses, and apply sunscreen. Dress in layers of breathable, light-colored, loose-fitting clothes. Good boots provide grip in rocky and slippery areas, but also provide a thick layer of protection from the hot earth. Follow posted safety rules and print out a map of the trail to stay on track. Prolonged exposure to heat can cause disorientation or even heat stroke. If your body temperature gets too high during a hike, you run the risk of suffering heat stroke. It's usually caused by dehydration, which leads to failure of the body's natural temperature control system. Symptoms include headache, dizziness, muscle cramps, nausea, disorientation, lack of sweat, and loss of consciousness. If you start to experience any of these signs, stop and find a shady area along the trail where you can rest, drink some water, and refuel with a healthy snack. If symptoms persist, call 911. On hot days, it's best to leave your dog at home, since dogs get overheated easily, especially those with short snouts, such as pugs. Never leave your pet in the car. On an 85-degree day, a car can reach 102 degrees in just 10 minutes, and even soar up to 120 degrees, even with the windows down an inch or two. If you do take your dog on the trail, bring plenty of water for your pet, and don't walk your dog on hot pavement, which can burn your pet's paws. As immigration and customs enforcement raids ramp up nationwide, detaining and deporting even many immigrants who committed no crimes, an ICE out of El Cajon march and rally was held June 28th calling for support of immigrants. Trump ran on a platform of deporting violent criminals who are undocumented, but KPBS reports that since Trump took office in January, the number of detained immigrants who have no criminal record has skyrocketed by 12,000%, from 800 to over 11,700. By contrast, detentions of convicted criminals in ICE detention rose only 59%, from 9,000 in January to 14,500 in June. The punishment for merely crossing the border without documentation is deportation under the Trump administration, even for those who have worked in the U.S. for decades, even those who came here as children. That's a sharp contrast to previous administrations in both parties, such as Republican Ronald Reagan, who granted amnesty to many immigrants, or Democrat Barack Obama, who showed mercy in creating the DACA program to allow immigrants brought here as children to remain in the U.S. In recent months, those detained include several undocumented workers at a painting contracting company here in unincorporated El Cajon, as well as restaurant employees in San Diego and over 2,000 immigrants detained in Los Angeles. Many have lived in the U.S. for decades. ICE has shown seemingly no mercy, deporting even a Marine Corps veteran's wife who was still breastfeeding their baby, Associated Press reports. Further stoking fears are growing reports of abusive treatment of migrants put into detention facilities. An investigation by Wired.com reviewed records from hundreds of emergency calls from ICE detention facilities across the U.S. The records, including audio recordings, reveal a system inundated by life-threatening incidents, delayed treatment, and overcrowding, Wired reports. A pregnant woman who miscarried was denied care for 3 days after her baby died. Wired reports in an article titled, "They're Not Breathing, Inside the Chaos of ICE Detention Center 911 Calls." An immigrant deported to an infamous El Salvador prison without due process suffered psychological and physical torture, according to his attorney, including being beaten and forced to kneel all night long, stripped naked, and losing over 30 pounds, according to a court filing, MSN reports. Other immigrants have been sent to Guantanamo Bay, the same site where Al-Qaeda terrorists have been detained since the 9/11 terror attacks. And now, a new alligator Alcatraz detention tent city has been set up in a Florida swamp, which some have likened to a concentration camp. Even some American citizens have been wrongfully detained by ICE, according to CNN and other news outlets. The CNN report cites concerns over racial profiling and violations of constitutional rights. The American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, has just filed a lawsuit against the federal government over masked agents who refused to identify themselves carrying out warrantless raids to abduct and disappear people in Southern California. Meanwhile, in El Cajon, marchers chant, "Immigrants are welcome here. No hate, no fear." Some carried anti-Trump and anti-ICE signs, while other signs called for the recall of El Cajon Councilman Phil Ortiz. Ortiz changed his stance to cast the deciding vote on a measure that allowed city police to increase cooperation with federal immigration authorities. One sign reminds everyone that America has been a nation of immigrants since Columbus arrived. The sign reads, "The most dangerous immigrant arrived in 1492. The march and rally were organized by a coalition led by Latinos en Acción. In addition to speakers, it featured examples of Latino music, dance, and culture. Among the marchers was Carlos Gomez Perez, a proud Iraq War veteran who says he has lived in El Cajon since 1992. In an interview with East County Magazine, Perez said, "I am here because I need to step up and speak for the ones who cannot speak for themselves," adding, "I know what it feels like to be undocumented and having to be living in the shadows for fear of being deported." He adds, "I'm no longer that 9-year-old undocumented boy that had no voice. I'm now a 42-year-old Marine combat veteran from Fallujah who's been shot twice and awarded the Silver Star, which is the third highest medal of honor." Perez says he wears his Iraqi War combat veteran hat as a shield to prevent racial profiling, which he says he's experienced when not wearing it. He recalls that someone spoke up for him when he had no voice as a child to assure he would have a pathway forward. And now, he says, it's my duty as well as a privilege to speak up for other people that currently are scared. He faults the Trump administration for pledging to deport criminals, but then broadening the mass deportations to even include young children. And he asks, how is an 8-year-old kid in fourth grade a criminal if they are being handcuffed and deported? No one is saying enough is enough. He criticizes El Cajon's city council majority for voting 3-2 to have police cooperate more with ICE in an era of mass deportations of seemingly any non-citizens. The Trump administration has even revoked special protected status from some immigrants who came here legally, such as translators who helped the U.S. military in Afghanistan. Perez says he's been to El Cajon city council meetings and talked with Mayor Bill Wells, with this message, your job ultimately is to make sure that all of your constituents feel safe. He faults the mayor for failing to take action to help those who are having to fear ICE raids taking place. Of El Cajon's controversial vote, the veteran says, now the rest of the cities want to follow suit. This is where it started, and we've got to put an end to it and bring a light to what is happening, not only in San Diego and Los Angeles, but honestly, in the entire nation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.